Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 168. This is a show about Linux. We cover all sorts of Linux topics, news, hardware, software, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, a.k.a. the Ice Machine, and I'm here, as always, with my good friend, the Linux maven, Stephen McLaughlin, better known as the Door-to-Door Geek. How's it going, Dort?
Hey, Mr. Coop. Things are going good. I will say, this seems like the time of the year where we're having a hard time connecting. It's been a couple weeks. I know you've been, I don't want to say dreadfully busy, but you've been preoccupied.
Yep, I took over a new position at work, which I did about a year and a half ago again. So I'm in charge of a larger operation now, which is nice. But yeah, but I can say that I've bounced back into podcasting much quicker than I did last time. And yeah, Christmas time is just always nuts. But I'm committing to making it happen one day, one way or another. If we have to go off the beaten path and not do it Monday nights, we'll figure out a way. But the show is not off the rails, where we're firmly on. And I hired an extra conductor just in case.
Awesome. And I'll say this in a very unselfish manner. I am very happy your employer recognizes you ain't no slouch, that you do have time for that, and that they, don't, slow you down, hold you back. They actually give you more responsibility, thus more opportunity to prove your worth.
Yes. It's nice knowing that, knowing that I can be relied upon, that my good deeds have been rewarded, and I'm still, highly regarded in my field, and I have, I'm actually in charge of a team now as well, on top of my normal duties, so that's fun, but yeah.
Well, until you run out of zip ties.
And I just realized, so, Door, well, anybody watching the live stream too, you guys, I just installed a new wireless router in my office, but on my webcam, it's directly behind my head, and it looks like I have three dreadlocks sticking out the top of my head.
I'm going to guess you got close to the same model of router that I just got a week ago.
What do you have?
I have the TP-Link N750, I believe it is.
Actually, mine's an ASUS. It's the RT-AC68.
Oh, I tried.
ACU? Yeah.
I tried.
It was ridiculously overpriced, but I didn't pay for it, so...
Well, no. It's only overpriced if it underperforms.
Well, that's true. Well, no, it's top class, and it's funny because Martin Rambo Obando Tater, who does the notes for the show, and of course hosts Geeksters on Tuesday. Well, you can watch live. I believe it's 3 p.m. Pacific. Maybe it's 3 p.m. Eastern. I don't remember.
No. Wait. I'll get this right. 3 p.m. Pacific.
6 p.m. Eastern. There you go. Yeah. So you just add or subtract three. Yeah. Yeah, but he and I were talking shortly after I bought this about routers, and he turned me on to TP-Link, and I thought, well, hey, they get good ratings. What are the prices on these things? And it was literally like less than a quarter of what I paid for this one. But like I said, well, I should say what this one costs, because I didn't pay for this. But yeah, it's a fantastic piece of kit. I'm just running it stock right now. I'm going to throw OpenWRT or DWRT on it soon, just to play with it some more. But would you mind sharing what your SSID is on the air? I mean, are you afraid of some...
Door-to-Door Geek.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No, it's Door-to-Door Geek. It's always been Door-to-Door Geek. I went through a little phase where I would have a secondary router, and I would call it FBI van,
right.
Hack this, yeah. You know, all kinds of stuff like that. But now it's just Door-to-Door Geek out of sheer laziness.
Mine... I used to change it every once in a while. At one point, it was runny diarrhea.
Oh, nobody wants to connect to that.
Exactly, right. Nowadays, with everything in the news, you could call yours Ebola. No one's going to try to connect, you know. But sure. mine is Overdose 6, which is a reference to one of my favorite novels, The Contortionist's Handbook. And if you guys ever just read the first chapter, you should get why it's called that. It's a fantastic book. But yeah, if you guys have a funny SSID that you use, that you legitimately have used in the past, not a list of them from the internet, send them my way to cody@podnos.com. I'd love to hear. Well, so it's here, Dor, the episode we've been talking about since we did the last one.
Yes. But I will say this. I haven't yet researched whether or not I can put open word DDWRT tomato or that other brand new one that I can never remember the name of it. Aftermarket firmware or extra firmware, uh-huh. secondary firmware, whatever, on my router. But I think I need to look into it because the performance I am getting is less than my WRT54GL.
Yeah, I pay for a mid to high range package through Comcast. And that's all I'm going to say about those people before I fly off the handle. I don't want to get splinters in my fingers, so I'm not going to fly off the handle. I'm not going to talk about them. But anyway, it's the only option in my area. Okay, I don't have fiber or anyway. I had a Linksys. What was it? E2000? No external antennas. It was a great workhorse. I had it for it's been 4 or 5 years now. It was a wireless end, and it did well. But I plugged this in overnight. And I made the SSID the same because, God forbid, my wife's phone doesn't connect the next morning and I would have to do, geez. Yep. So, and then I did a speed test immediately and it was just a ridiculous performance kick. I was just like...
Okay. Can I ask, what do you call ridiculous?
It went from about 35 down to 58 down.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah. And about, 8 up to about 13 or 14 up.
Nice.
Yeah. Same internet package whatsoever, just different equipment. That's it.
Well, hardwired, I went from about 30 and 30, mm-hmm. 30 up, 30 down, sometimes up to the 40s, it would go 40s up, 40s down. To the first hardwired speed test I did, it went 68 down, 89 up. And I'm still getting fantastic hardwired speeds, but my wireless speeds are horrid, and my Chromecast, which worked okay, not perfect with the Linksys WR54G, barely works. It like is super ridiculously flaky. So I gotta look at see what is the suggested configuration, if you will, because I have both. It's a dual band 2.4 5 gigahertz, mm-hmm. so I can have two SSIDs, one for each band.
Yeah,
but I can have four because I can have two more guest modes. So I don't know if it's cool if the regular 2.4 and 5 should have the same name or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But either way, what I'm finding is some of the devices will only see the 2.4 spectrum.
Right.
And one or two of my devices will only see the 5 spectrum.
Well, the devices are smart enough to know which one it's going to perform better under. So it will automatically, most devices will connect to the stronger of the two, or will at least attempt to by default.
Right. But the other thing is also Mr. Obando there, he's the Road Warrior's only name I can give him now. He suggested one of the first aftermarket things he does to almost every router he buys is the first thing he looks at getting is aftermarket and antennas.
Yes.
Because the difference is so great.
It's night and day. Yeah, yeah. This one came with 3 dBi 10 antennas, and Martin actually sent me the link a while back. We talked about the site. And actually, Martin, we should get that link in the show notes because this site, I can't remember the name of it. They sell all sorts of Wi-Fi equipment as well as modification kits. Like I can take my old Linksys, pop a couple holes in it with my drill, and then install, without even soldering, a little board inside of it to make the two external antennas. And then from there, I can attach 3, 7, 9, 15, or even like 24 dBi antennas to it.
Oh my Lord.
But yeah, a set of 3 9 dBi antennas, it only runs about $22 shipped.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, not that bad.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to look into that. But OLF is days away, so no, I'm not looking at it now.
Let's go into that at the very end. We definitely need to get some OLF talk in here. But
We'll get into that in the end.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, all right. So we are here. We are talking. Doris here in his Menards hat. I'm here in my haven't had a haircut in a long time. Answering your emails finally, and we're just going to get right into it. First of all, guys and girls, you heard me, Ashley. Thank you so much for sending in this stuff. We do get to correspond with our audience through social media, and we're also contacted via the podcast at linuxrestos.com and the voicemail, which is 7076 Podnut. Quite a bit. So here we go. The first email we have is from a good friend, Sherman Williams. Shout outs to you, Sherman. He says, hello, Linux to the rest of us. I believe we can use Linux to show people how you can teach your kids to use a free, fun, friendly OS that's geared directly to their age group. And then he provides a link to Edubuntu or Sonar Linux, how to get started. Surely.
Yeah, I will say, I don't think Edubuntu, I don't want to say it's properly documented. I don't think it's properly pamphleted. It's not properly showcased, because what I found out shortly, I believe, before this email maybe, was Edubuntu is not a true, quote-unquote, kid-friendly distribution. It's an education-geared distribution where you can actually install different, I don't want to say grade levels, but different levels of software for different levels of education up through college kind of thing. It's a true education-geared distribution. What I wished was there was super quick guides to installation and configuration for certain age brackets.
That would be nice, but it is a nice base, and then it's, from what I've read and I've dealt with it in the past too, easily configurable, yes, to sort of set up. And when you're thinking about being a an administrator at a educational institution, you know, they're setting up these machines, you know, per semester or per year anyway. So if they configure one, then of course they can, you know, image it and then push it out to the network. To where they could, and what I do like about this too is that instead of other operating systems, they could, you know, cater it to, you know, a specific lab, and then through different means have different installations on it, either through partitioning hard drives or using my Cody Cooper method to suit a number of different grade levels. So yeah, he is right; it's a fantastic product. But yeah, it's not quote unquote kid friendly right out of the box. There are some others that are, that the names of them are escaping me now.
Oh, like Poo Poo. I want to say it's called Poo Poo?
No, it's
Doo Doo.
Yeah. D-O-U-D-O-U.
Yeah, Doo Doo. Yeah. Now, they're really, really kid-friendly distributions. Mm-hmm. What I don't know about those are, do they actually do any teaching? I mean, I think they're the, where you don't want to give your kid a $200 tablet, you could give them a older laptop with Doo Doo on it.
Right.
I really love the name of that distro.
I know you do. So what we've ascertained is you like saying doo-doo. Do you? Do you like saying doo-doo?
I do. Do.
You do say, you do like saying doo-doo. Okay, good, good, good. Okay, now this next guy, this next fella who wrote in, this is so funny. I can't believe I'm going to share this on the show. So this guy, Mark Segrist, sent in an email, and I read the name and I got shivers because that was the name of my best friend's dad, who's now passed away. But this guy was an appliance repairman in a very rough part of town, we'll say. So in high school, we would go over to Gabe and Nash's house. That was the Secrets Boys. And, you know, during that time of year, that's actually their house is where I did the majority of my drinking in my entire life in that home, in my teenage years. But that guy was such a, just a BA. Like, I read that name and I just immediately saw it. Like, anyway, it's not him unless he's communicating to me from beyond, but it's probably not him. But anyway, Mark wrote, love your podcast. You asked for a video topic to cover for new Linux users. I have one for you. How to best set up / partition your hard drives for dual booting both Windows and Linux. But here's the rub. Many of us nowadays have multiple hard drives, both an SSD and a larger hard drive. So a video that lays out optimal setup for those of us with both an SSD and a hard drive would be ideal. Mark from eLearning Live.
I will say, there's a horrible commercial on U.S. television. If you just look up I can't remember the name of the commercial. It's horrible. I can't stand it. Where a guy wears his pants too low and he keeps saying the word ideal. And it just rubs me. You want to talk about rubs me the wrong way every time that guy opens his mouth. Here's the hook, here's the crook, here's the kink, here's the catch. Okay. I want to passionately, in a real bad way, want to make Linux videos helping people get over the humps. I did already do a quick documentation of installation and drives. The gimmick is, this is the number of videos that are going to be needed just for this topic.
Oh, yeah.
Straight install on Windows 7. Straight install on Windows 8 with UEFI. Straight install Windows 8 with UEFI and Secure Boot. Dual boot on Windows 7, single drive. Dual boot on Windows 8, UEFI. Dual boot with Windows 8 with Secure Boot. Dual boot on Windows 7 with two separate drives, one of them being SSD. There's literally going to have to be 9 different videos just for this one topic, is the way that I'm looking at it. But here's the whole hook or crook. When you have a true UEFI system, I've seen computers where you cannot install your grub to the master boot record. It will not work. You have to install it in a special partition called UEFI. And there's a folder in there called boot, and you have to basically install it in there. And I literally pounded on a computer for a week to get Ubuntu to install and dual boot correctly with that one. It's not clearly documented anywhere I looked, but I do remember someone mentioning it someplace. So I just tried it, and miraculously it worked. Now, of course, first thing I did was image that computer because I'm terrified it's going to break.
Right. Mark, what I will say is if you're not following me on Google+, please do. It's just Cody Cooper. Within the next couple weeks or so, I have a piece of I have a little piece of technology coming in that I found online that will remedy this situation. And for those of you who know what I've spoken about earlier, the way that I do it, I dubbed the Cody Cooper method, is that I don't dual boot on any drives. I use separate drives for everything. I have storage drives for my storage, media drives for media, and then I have different operating system drives that I actually unplug and plug in data in power SATA cables to whichever one I want to boot in. But I got this new thing I found that's going to eliminate a lot of the hassle, and I will put it on either G+ or I'll do a blog post about it, and you guys can check it out there because it's pretty neat.
Yeah, and I will say, Mark, you're entered into the contest. Number one. Number two, I cannot emphasize enough to people out there, I've now been using Linux almost solely at my house for 6 years, almost 7 years, I want to say. I feel like I've lost a little bit of that new user hurdle, obstacles. That's why I'm asking people to please send in submissions on what would make for good videos. It's not because I want to see what you guys have to say. I literally want to make sure I'm covering topics that people want.
No, yeah, and... After a while, I mean, there are hurdles to this experience, but it's nothing that can't be overcome with a little bit of, you know, comprehension and reading, you know. As long as you can follow directions, you can pretty much do a lot of this stuff. But yeah, there are so many things that, you know, you struggle with in the beginning. And they're not big struggles. It's just like, wait a minute, how do I do that? But after you install, you know, different Linux distributions so much or deal with certain hardware hurdles, after a while, it's just like a habit. You know, you just remember how to do it. So yeah, it is nice having that fresh perspective. And can you remind the listeners exactly what contest is being entered by submitting an idea for a video?
Well, the winner is going to get a LastPass subscription for a year. And to be honest, I believe I have more than one. Yeah, even if I don't, I'm going to try to give away at least like 4 or 5 because you guys are doing really good. Is all I gotta say. I cannot thank you guys enough.
Very cool. All right, thank you, Mark. Moving right along. Let's see here. I hope I'm not going to butcher this. I'm just going to go for it. Door. I'm going in. Okay.
Full throttle.
Niels Kopchatsky writes, "Hi. A thing that would be great to talk about in terms of video related topics would be screencasting and streaming. How one can record a screencast or stream to sites like Twitch. When doing a screencast, what are the best tools to edit afterwards? For example, I'm relatively new to Linux and still search for an easy and reliable way to stream to Twitch. For example, Screen Studio is great, but I can't get it to really work in Manjaro. Now, I am using Simple Screen Recorder, but that is fiddly and I didn't try yet how I... And I didn't try yet how I set it up with an external mic. And I haven't looked yet how I cannot also stream the game, but also a video of my webcam at the same time. In addition, I'd like to enter the LastPass giveaway." You're entered. Congratulations.
Yeah, bottom line, okay, we're going to flash back 10 years ago. Audio in Linux was putrid, hard to do, took a lot of work, and you still wouldn't get full duplex audio for the most part. 5 years ago, Wi-Fi chips were extremely painful. It seemed like 2 out of 3 installs you did, you'd have to fight to get the Wi-Fi to work. jump up to today. The one place where Linux is extremely lacking, at least in my daily usage when I look around, is video streaming utilities. Screen Studio is a very nice tool, but it's completely in Java. I guarantee you his issue in Manjaro is the version of Java he has. No diggity doubt. Anything with Java means you will have problems. The likelihood of running it and having zero problems is slim to none. And if you don't have a problem right away, one will creep up after an update. That's just a simple fact of life. The only way I've ever seen to quote-unquote reliably stream to Twitch is to use Windows or Mac and to use software that costs like $500. I will say you can technically run VLC streaming from the command line to Twitch. And I heard it's not flaky. It actually can work. Now you want to dynamically change audio inputs and then put a micro thumbnail at the bottom of your video. That is asking a lot in the realm of Linux from my experience. I have heard of dedicated pieces of hardware you can connect to your computer that can do these kind of things. Mm-hmm. I have no experience with them.
I do.
I will say, every time I've asked Venn Stone in the past, Venn Stone is the only guy I know in a complete Linux stack from top to bottom, from his front door, going out his back, everything's running Linux, stream really good quality video to Linux, have really good on-the-fly switching of video, and being able to show thumbnails in the bottom corner. And every time I ask him, what does it take, he cackles methodically and says, a whole lot of money, sonny. Because it takes good, ridiculously good, beefy hardware, and then it takes a very precise configuration of Java and using Webcam Studio, I believe, is his tool of choice.
Yeah, I mentioned in the past I belong to a fighting game group here in my local area. And that, and then also a lot of friends who stream on Twitch do speed runs. Just then this one guy, one of my friends, he just bangs on one game. He plays for like 20 hours a week on Twitch, but he gets just ridiculous money from the watchers because he's consistent with it. So there's fun and money to be had and made with that. Now, all of those guys, none of them run Linux. They all run Windows or Mac. And yes, they all have none of them have expensive hardware. Expensive software packages. They all do it through an external device. The two companies. Well, there's a few companies out there. There's Hapag. That's a Hapage. I think Hapag. A lot of people say Happage. It's not right. It's Hapag.
Yeah.
They make the old the HD DVR series, which is now kind of dated. You can also get a good company that makes a streaming equipment is Aver Media. That's AVER and then Media. But the thing is with much like Dorset, think about not even 10 years ago. Think about 5 years ago. Well, you can go back to 10. Think about trying to get your like a standard mini DV camera like you'd buy like Circuit City, to work to be supplied with any software that would work on Linux. It just doesn't happen. It was all Windows 2000, Windows ME, stock on the disk right out of the box. It was very, very hard to get that to work. You have the same kind of hurdles right now, but I can honestly say that I haven't tried to borrow any of those items because they're kind of expensive for me to just say, I want to test this in Linux. You're talking $150, $350, devices. Now, you can also buy the PCI or PCI-X cards, or PCIe as well. From the same companies to actually throw into PCs to do it that way. If you're running it specifically off a PC, which if you're using Linux to do this, you should be, yes. But it's about the same cost. It's not really that much of a cost savings, but the performance is much better for the dollar. What I can say is, I would throw it out to the community and ask any of you if you're streaming on Linux. And you know what? We can even throw a Pedro a line and maybe see if he can throw us a little bit of an idea as to what he would suggest. But yeah, Ven is absolutely right. And I even asked Dor that one time. So what does he do? And he goes, oh, it's black magic and voodoo and cash just in a big ball that causes that to be really, really smooth. And if you guys want to see what that kind of production looks like, go check out Linux Gamecast, because they do live playthroughs. They do previously recorded footage that they play during their reviews. They do it all. And just like Dor said, from top to bottom, it's all Linux.
Yeah, and I'm going to say streaming and screen capture in Linux are two completely different things. Streaming, for instance, streaming and green screening is something I cannot do without lots of liquor. It's not friendly. It's not nice. It's not easy at all. The only tool that exists that I know that can do it is Webcam Studio, and I cannot find the patience to work with that piece of software, even on a i5 quad-core 16 gig of RAM box running awesome as the desktop, aka using no RAM or processor. It is very buggy and very slow and very laggy. Now, to screen record, I can honestly never remember what Venstone uses. I know it's command line, where you can put in very precise settings into it. And that's why he uses the command line version. He can literally get the exact settings that he wants for the optimal performance. It churns up. I mean, it literally sucks RAM down. But I will say, for everyday video screen recording, if you cannot get Screen Studio to work, XVidCap is a nice little program that has good options that can do okay, decent, acceptable screen recordings. Mm-hmm. And to get the video to pop up in the bottom corner, you can literally cheat. You can use an app called GUVCU.
Yes.
And basically just shrink the window down, put it down in the bottom corner. Voila, you have yourself sitting in the bottom corner.
Yeah, that piece of software is awesome. I would try that if you haven't already, Niels. I would give that a try. Wait, is that right? Hold on. Yeah, Niels. Okay. Try GUVC and see if you can do something there. But his question was more geared to streaming. Do you ever watch anything on Twitch, Dor?
I've watched awesome games done quick type speed runs. Mm-hmm. I've never actually sat in with a Twitch watching someone play live. I honestly don't know why, but I've never done that.
Yeah, most of the response you can get from there, I mean, excuse me, the better way to do it if you're going to do Twitch at all is live, because if it's pre-recorded and you're throwing it up on a channel, why not just put it on YouTube, you know? Right. But anybody in the community doing anything at home or know of anything that they've heard works, or I'd rather have tested stuff. Please send us an email to podcast@linuxtherestofus.com, and we will follow up with that. When we get some responses, that's something that I would love to do. You know, I would love to do that with my boy. Do a father son, you know, Twitch thing. I think that'd be fun. So, but yeah, I'm not doing it on Windows. My the last one, actually, God man, I don't want to get into it. But yeah, I want to do that soon. So yeah, I want to make it happen. Go ahead.
Well, and one thing I'll add is Webcam Studio was, I don't want to say abandoned. They've ceased development on it. The last time there was an update was April of 2013. So with that not getting any attention, I do not know of anything that can manipulate live video feeds on Linux.
We need to get a Kickstarter going.
There needs to be some care and some love put in this direction. That's the only way this is going to see any progress, because the high-end people and the people like Leo Laporte has no problem just going out and buying a dedicated piece of hardware, a TriCaster, like a $25,000 piece of equipment. I say, in my logic, this is a perfect opportunity where you can bring in lower end hardware, open source software, gear it hard towards that market, and quite easily destroy them. But you know, what do I know?
Yeah. No, you're right. Think 5 years ago, would you ever think about building yourself a TiVo?
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
Now you can do it for less than $100. Parts at home. Software's free.
Yeah, like XBMC hit a nerve and it just spurred that whole movement. Even though Myth TV existed beforehand, I think XBMC hit a nerve that just caused development to, I don't want to say spiral out of control, but happened very quickly.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, is that when, I mean, look at, well, what I'm trying to get at is if there's money to be made on it, and if it deals with entertainment, you will see just people jump over all that development, and they'll put their own spin on it. It gets a little bit diluted, one or two rise to the top, you know, the cream always does. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I hope we answered your question to the best of our ability, but yes, reaching out to the community, please send me an email to codyandpodness.com if you know of anything, because I'd be interested in, I'll buy a card, I'll test it out. Okay. Our good friend Rick Crouch, excuse me, writes in, let's see here. I believe it's a link to a cartoon. Why did I not see this already?
It's just to an article.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. So it's more of just a kind of a funny anecdote. Talking about some nerve problems he has, the Pope said, must treat them well, these nerves. Give them mate in Argentinian stimulant, or mate, excuse me. Give them mate in Argentinian tea every day. I wonder if cinnamon would help.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes, and then he says, one of these neuroses is that I'm too much of a homebody. Those two lines in conjunction make me believe he sounds like the perfect Linux user to me.
Have you ever drinking mate before? Have you ever drinking mate? What the hell am I? Have you ever drank mate before?
Not that I'm aware of.
It is. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's. I mean, it has a weird flavor. You can get flavored. Well, whatever. But no, it's like made from like tree bark or something.
Delicious.
But buddy, I used to work overnights. Actually, back in the day when I was just a listener, I was working an awful job as a stock person for a grocery store and then managing that crew. And those awful bastards are still working there. Anyway, that's why I listen to a lot of podcasts. But man, you know, I was working 40 hours a week there, and like, you know, the 35 of my other job, and staying up was hard. And after you try every energy drink on the market, all of a sudden your body's just like, yeah, whatever. It doesn't even affect me. What else you got? You know, I'm not about to, you know, skip onto hard drugs. So one of my buddies is like, have you ever tried this? And I was like, no. I take a couple sips of it, and my eyes like shoot wide open. I was like, what is that? He would buy this bag, much like he'd buy like a pound of coffee at the store, but that thing would last him like over a month. He would mix it at home, and he brought it in cold, just, you know, in water, and yeah, man, it would just get you all sorts of jacked up. Mm. And yes, some cinnamon would have made it taste better.
There you go.
So yes, Rick, you and the Pope are correct.
Exactly.
All right. So thank you for writing in, Rick. Michael Kornblum writes, thank you very much for your time, effort, and spirit of giving that you have exhibited over the years. Not one podcast goes by without me learning something new about Linux and open source software. But with this being said, there were a few points where you were less than spot on in your last episode. Currently, I'm a student of front-end web development at a local community college. Additionally, I blog about web development with open source software. And finally, I'm working on an open source project of my own. As a result, I tend to listen to a lot of podcasts about my craft, read the trade magazines, and subscribe to a lot of newsletters pertaining to the use of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. In your latest episode, you gave the impression that JavaScript is insecure. This sentiment is only somewhat accurate. The worst threat JavaScript tends to pose is when it is employed in a cross-site scripting attack, XSS. The threat posed by XSS is easily mitigated through the use of best practices, such as not letting users submit HTML inside the form of data. Every programming language has similar vulnerabilities, and it's every coder's responsibility to keep their product secure. The other point I'd like to discuss is that JavaScript is currently, but to a lesser degree, used for animation, and was never intended to be its sole purpose. Examples of how JavaScript benefits user experience ranging from lessening load time through the use of AJAX to pre-server side form validation, to many of the APIs used in the current HTML5 spec, such as geolocation, offline data storage, and real-time video communication. Finally, JavaScript is used to implement HTML5 and CSS3 like features in older browsers. At the end of the day, every tool in the W3C spec has its own specific use. HTML is intended to provide content to the user in an accessible manner. CSS is intended to define the website's presentation, and JavaScript, when used correctly, introduces a behavioral layer to the site that enhances user experience. Finally, I had an opportunity to look at the tools in the DesignZum article posted on your show notes. Many of the tools described, including Bluefish, are dated and don't adequately support the HTML5 specification. With your approval, I'd like to send you a list of tools I myself employ in my own day-to-day coding. Once again, thank you and Coop for broadcasting such a quality show, and I hope I didn't come off as a total schmuck. I just wanted to make sure that you and the community have the most complete and up-to-date information pertaining to what we discussed. Thanks again, Michael.
Yes, I want tools people use, not tools people suggest on a posting on some site I find. I know Bluefish isn't up to date. I've seen artifacts, let's say, happen when I use it too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely believe it's out of date. I will say the problem, I think, with JavaScript isn't JavaScript. It's like he said, you have to use best practices. You have to basically scrub your data when it's being inputted. And I think lazy developers have given it a bad name. I think it's outgrowing what its original use was, thus putting in new security things that people didn't think of before, kind of thing. I will say, though, it seems to me, from what I'm hearing from other people in the industry, JavaScript is losing its power, and CSS is really starting to become the powerhouse when doing websites. I know CSS has grown a heck of a lot. I still think it's easier for me to program in JavaScript just because it seems more logical as I type it. And I will say the one web developer tool that I've been playing with here for the last couple of days, and I'm genuinely shocked at the things that my inadequate web developer self can pull off, is using the Google web developer tool. It's a very different looking interface. You can do animations, which I believe is using CSS solely, no JavaScript that I saw in the file. But it's, of course, primarily geared to let you make Google AdSense ads easy, but you can use it for generalized web development. The one tool I would love a real web developer to get into and evaluate is Brackets. But unfortunately, to really evaluate it, you have to have a Adobe Cloud Connect, I believe it's called, account, and download two or three of the pieces of that cloud software to get the full benefits of using Brackets. But it's a really interesting tool. I'll say that. Yes, I want to know what people are using in the real world.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, you'll, and especially him being a community college student, and you might think, oh, here he goes. No, I'm not going off. I went to community college, but here's my experience. Here's a lot of my friends' experience with community college too. Well, just college in general. The texts that you're reading are dated. The information that you're getting in school, especially when it comes to tech stuff, in some people's experience, not everywhere. I'm not blaming every educational institution, but it's dated stuff. By the time you get that degree, you're already way behind the curve. And it's your responsibility to go out there and find the tools that are being used in development today in order to get that edge. It sounds like to me he's doing the work, or at least he has some tools that are working for him that may be relatively, I don't want to say unknown, but not, you know, the big heavy hitters, you know, the Pepsi and Coke, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So yeah, by all means, send him along. Worst case scenario, we just don't read it, but we will.
No,
I will.
No. I'll say my experience with college is the individual professor educator makes the difference, makes or breaks the value of the course. If he has a good instructor and him himself is basically on his own looking for information, gathering information, evaluating tools kind of thing, that to me is the best of both worlds, because you learn what someone says is right, and then you use your own tools and your own evaluation and your own common sense, and you figure out what works the best for you kind of thing. And a good professor can give you so much insight. I will say that's the one thing I never had in my community college experience, which was very short because the instructors I found were a little bit too inebriated to assist me.
Mm. Yeah, I can think of a couple right now. Mm-hmm. Oh, George. I miss you, George. Wherever you are, I miss you. You taught me some wonderful things. Okay. But yes, please send that list of tools. We will take them into consideration, and we'll forward them out to the community somehow. And Dora, I gotta kind of call you out on something here. It could be a female professor too. She could be making some lessons.
Well, if I said he, I meant it in the unisex.
Okay, all I'm saying is that between these two hosts, I'm the one sticking up for the ladies, and don't you forget it.
I'm married. I don't need any more.
So am I, but you know, it doesn't hurt to be looked at.
Yeah. Speak for yourself.
Okay.
Lowered expectations.
Yeah.
Then you can shock them.
Well, no, over time, it's like a natural progression, you know, like, you know, it's like, well, I don't need to date the 6 foot tall football player anymore. How about a guy with a job?
Exactly. A guy with a sense of humor.
Who doesn't sell cars.
Right. Yes.
if any of you, selling cars is hard, but I'm just saying there's a couple, okay, if you were a quarterback in high school and you didn't make it to college, there's a few types of jobs that I've seen those people go into. One is selling cars, and another one is washing them. I'm going to leave it at that. We're going to move on. Okay, so thank you, Michael, for that email. John Woodward is the next person. Oh, here we go. I remember this one. Here we go. All right, okay. John Woodward writes in, "Hey, Cody and Dor, greetings from England, the land of real ales and awesome bacon." And to that I say, I don't believe you. You got to prove it with samples or fly us out there, then you can prove it to us in person, considering you're such a hospitable country. Mm-hmm. The Vegemite UK alternative you alluded to is on show on The Vegemite UK alternative you alluded to is on show 164 is Marmite, and he provides a link to Marmite. It's a yeast extract that has been around since 1902 and I believe predates Vegemite by 20 years. A byproduct of the brewing process, it's actually made from beer.
Hey, all right.
It's one of those strange English inventions that you either love or hate with a passion. There seems to be no middle ground. They even advertise it as either you love it or you hate it, with I hate Marmite t-shirts. That sounds cool. There is an independent website at ilovemarmite.com that explains it all. I'm surprised you guys don't like it with its incredibly salty, savory flavor like bacon and its beer roots. But then you are from the country that gave the world aerosol cans of cheese and semi-liquid marshmallow fluff in a jar. Cheers, guys. Big John, a.k.a. Hexbeck.
Touche. Touche, John. I will say, my logic is we don't have it over here because no one's tried to sell it over here. That's my logic. And it wouldn't shock me if it predates Vegemite by 20 years. You know, how the history of England and the UK and Great Britain is just way, 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 way too far back there. I love the idea of a company publishing a shirt saying, I hate the product that they're selling. That's just genius. I mean, it has to work is all I'm saying.
It's almost like a dare.
It is. I have since that cast tried Vegemite. I will say, A, it does not go well with beer. I found that out. I think I understand the appeal with it. I'm not sure if I like it. I might like Marmite more. I don't know. But Vegemite, I'll make sure I don't eat as much so Peter 64 can have more.
Yeah, there you go. Well, John, in response to your knock about aerosol cheese and marshmallow fluff in a jar, I prefer German beer. And in response to you saying, I'm surprised you guys don't like it because of the incredible salty and savory flavor, you're right. It should fit. I'm much more of a savory eater than a sweet eater. Sweets, like, soda is probably like the one thing that's really sweet that I consume on a regular basis. But I don't eat a lot of candy. I don't like most desserts. I love cheesecake. I don't care what the hell you put in cheesecake. I'm eating it. It doesn't matter. You could put Marmite in cheesecake, and I would probably eat it. But something about it. And here's the thing. I hate aerosol cheese. I hate. I will not eat imitation like the Kraft singles. That's not even cheese. That's just I can't stand that stuff. So. Just the thought of like spreading Marmite, Vegemite, the aerosol cheese like on a cracker or just like squirting some in your mouth, it just makes me gag. I don't know what it is. I agree with you. First of all, yeah, no, I don't have time to unwrap a single slice of imitation cheese. I need it on the go quick in case I happen to come upon a sleeve of Ritz. And I need to shoot this out real quick, so we'll put it in an aerosol can. Yes, that's ridiculous.
Quite. Yeah, I will say I am to a savory over sweet, so I'm interested. I'm not gonna lie, I'm interested.
Yeah, I would give it a try, and honestly, I would try Vegemite again. Was it us? Yeah, we were talking about it on this, but I think, but you guys are you are we Excuse me. Let me start over. My brain starting to misfire here. For episode 300 of Android App Addicts, you guys were alluding to the fact that you might eat it live on air in a hangout together.
I did eat it. We had a like club meetup hangout where listeners were able to join, and I did try it there. I then subsequently got little jars of it that I still have to send out to Eric and Steve. Mm. I just haven't got around to it yet.
I'm going
to
see if I can shoehorn my way onto that episode 300. Okay. I'm a semi-fixture of that show.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, all right. I know people. I'm important.
And I'll just say, two can play at the game of, well, your country gave us, because your country gave us the Spice Girls. Just saying.
Or
no country is immune.
Or we could say, we were sick of your country, so we started this one.
But that would be a little bit mean.
It would. That's why I say we could say it, but we're not saying it, because that would be mean. And this is a family show. Feel free to play with your lower third during the show. It doesn't distract me whatsoever.
Okay, no problem.
I do like German beer, but I'll tell you what. Have you ever had Wells Bombardier?
I don't believe no? I have.
Fantastic. And yeah, when it comes to ales, every English ale I've had has been fantastic. Very, very good. But yeah, lately, here's the thing. We're going to go off on a 15 to 20 second beer rant here. You get to a certain point, well, and this could be beer, candy, food, whatever. Don't get narrowed into just what you like. Get out there and experiment. I have a ridiculous, being Pacific Northwest, Martin O'Bannon can attest to this, and Aaron and Chuck and everybody that lives out here. Everywhere we go, like Stone Store Distance, we have these stores. You just walk in and it's just beer for days, like hundreds of different ones. Just go pick a random one every once in a while. Risk the $2 or $3. Like I like stouts. I'll just grab one of these. You never know. You're gonna find your favorite.
Yeah.
Same with Linux distros. You never know. You yes. never know.
Well, and I'll say just like you should once in a while throw a distro in a VM to see what it looks like. There might be something that really catches your eye.
Yep.
Catches your fancy.
That's right.
At the same token, when I go out to eat with the family and I feel like it's my turn to have a drink with dinner, I order a beer I know I like. Now when I go out and I get six beers to bring home to myself, that's when I'll say, what's out there? What haven't I seen? What haven't I tried? And then I will try stuff, especially if it's imported. I will say one thing, American beer standards, to me, just don't seem to be up to par on mass scale production.
No, no way.
The Bushes, all of them.
No way.
But the smaller guys, I say do, and I just said do.
There you go, I heard it.
They do try, I think, genuinely more to make a more unique product. And that's what I want.
Yes. Newcastle Brown Ale is also very good. I like that. We're not going to turn this into a beer show. We already tried turning it into a Wi-Fi show.
Yeah.
I'm grabbing the wheel. I'm pulling it back on the road. Okay. But no, seriously, John, thank you very much. And yeah, I'll find a way to get some Marmite or Vegemite. And we'll do a review. All right. So, Israel Flores writes, "Hi, my name is Israel, and I just wanted to say that I love your podcasts of Linux, and I had a question. I installed Ubuntu 14.04 on my laptop, and it is an HP Envy. It has a fingerprint scanner on it. I cannot figure out how to get it to work on Linux. Please help, and thank you so much. I love your podcasts." By Israel. Thank you, Israel.
Yeah, I will say, this is a standard across the board generic statement that I honestly find to be mostly true. The more popular a piece of hardware is, make, model, manufacturer, the more probable it's going to work in Linux. It seems like there's a couple people out there making fingerprint readers, and it seems like none of them are truly open sourcing their fingerprint reader software, their drivers, their firmware.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem like you have a high probability of it working every time. He's running 14.04, the most current long-term stable edition of Ubuntu, which I would say if this was a dartboard, I would feel pretty confident that 14.04 for this should be a bigger block, easier to hit. When I looked at it, because we had a couple back and forth, it didn't look too good. I found multiple people with multiple postings about complaining about not being able to get it working. I will say it was the OpenSUSE, though, looked possible.
Yeah, out of any plug-and-play, a possibility for a distro, yeah, I would say Ubuntu or OpenSUSE. I think does is that the same laptop that Steve has, Steve Cherubino? I know it's an HP.
I honestly can't tell you.
Okay. But yeah, some of those HP Envys are nice because they can support the dual hard drives. And if I remember correctly, it's it was like their MacBook Pro. I don't want to say knockoff, but it was their MacBook Pro-esque, like all metal construction. So they're pretty nice. Had some had Beats sound there for a bit, for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Hopefully that's not a make or break for you, Israel. Although I will say that after installing Linux on several different systems, laptops and desktops alike, especially with when you're talking about the proprietary systems, where in this case HP, or if Dell had a specific thing on like a some sort of sound deal on their laptop, or this thing has a special media card reader, whatever it is, sometimes those little things just don't work, or they will work with a lot of hoop jumping. But ask yourself, it is at the end of the day, is the juice worth the squeeze? Do I really need this? Yeah, it'd be nice. At a certain point, it's not that you're trying to justify it because you want to use it. You're justifying it because it came with this piece of tech and that you purchased, so you feel a financial obligation to use every little thing on it. But if it's not essential for your day-to-day, just drop it.
Well, yeah, and here's my end-of-the-day bottom line 2 cents with this, and that is good. You don't want it to work. Fingerprint biometric is not security whatsoever.
Nope.
Okay, number one. If it's not a really expensive, really accurate fingerprint scanner, in about 11 months, it's going to randomly stop working because your fingerprint slowly morphs over time, and it's typically less than 18 months before people's fingerprints change enough to where only high-end fingerprint readers can still read it. Number one. Number two, in at least the U.S., law enforcement can force you to put your finger on a device to unlock it. That means to me it's not secure. They equate it to a key to a house. They can force you to hand over a key to a house. They cannot force you to tell them something. So if you have a password on your system, from what I've last heard, at least, you can still not be forced to give a password up by law enforcement. So to be honest, my wife has a Samsung Galaxy S5. My lovely and talented 6-year-old, she had a pattern lock on. He was playing a game, watched TV for a minute, looked down, the phone was locked. He tried to unlock it, failed a couple times, and then it switched over to a PIN number entry, to which my wife said, "I didn't set a PIN." I tried a couple exploits here, there. Nothing worked, partially because we were stressed. Okay, so just whatever, just fail it, force it to reset. Then upon reset, she noticed in the drop-down notification, "Set your fingerprint." And she said, "Oh, a fingerprint." I said, "Well, wait, first, I'm not telling you what to do. Here's the true facts about fingerprint trading. If you want to use it for convenience sake, that's great. But you better make sure you set up a backup PIN, because sooner or later that fingerprint thing is going to stop working."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I said, but number two, it's not security. It isn't. I said, number one, you better make sure it's a PIN you remember, because what happens if you just get a paper cut on your finger? Okay. You're not going to get into your phone. So it's okay to want the fingerprint reader, but I said it's not a security thing, and it's a very shaky thing because it can randomly just stop working.
Very true. And for those of you who are fans of any sort of Hong Kong cinema, you know that when a gang really just wants to access any of your, bank vaults with fingerprint readers on them, they're just going to cut the guy's hand off.
Exactly. I would.
It's a lot easier to go, "Hey, can you press here for a minute?" No, just slice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say this, the whole thing about security in general, and to which I've been soured on a lot of security, because it only takes one weak link to break the entire chain, and it's really difficult to have a completely solid, secure chain from beginning to end. I don't have any kind of lock on my phone. I mean, you just turn my phone on and you unlock it. Why? Because my phone's in my sight. If it's not in my sight, something went wrong already. So the likelihood of someone accessing my phone without me knowing is going to be very hard. They're going to have to physically knock me out, which if they knock me out, take the phone. Get away from me.
Right. All the more reason to wear a helmet in public. Think about it.
And always bring your towel.
That's right. Always. Well, the towel's got to be number one, because you just never know. All right. Well, thank you, Israel. And we got one more email. We'll probably save the email. Excuse me. We're going to save the voicemails. Cherubino, if he listened to this show, he'd be laughing right now, thinking he was contagious and he caused me a flub there. But he doesn't. He's listening to EDM right now somewhere off in the distance. We'll save the voicemails for another show because this is running a bit long. However, I do want to do one more email, and this came in today. So this is fresh off the presses. Did you smell that door? Do you smell that in the air right now?
Yes.
That sweet smell almost as if is that fresh bread? Is it bacon? What is it? Is it cake? It's a fresh email from this morning. I got it this morning. Dor may have got it this afternoon because Dor lives in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chris Chamley writes, Dor and Cody, have either of you used the Synergy Android Beta or any other program to give that ability to your tablets? I haven't rooted my tablet yet, and this is the first thing to give me a reason to do so. Curious about your thoughts, Chris. Now, Dor, you played with this today, right?
Oh, me? Oh, yeah. Me and Chris had seven back and forth.
I read them all. Saying. I know.
Yes. There's a couple. Okay, first off, I thought I already did this, but then I remembered it was not Android I was using. It was my Nokia N810 tablet thing. You know, whatever. I can't remember what it's called.
The N810, the smartphone.
No, it wasn't a smartphone. I think it was a portable internet tablet.
Oh, well, then it wasn't the A10.
And I used Synergy on that, but I literally, just for giggles, I literally had my desktop computer. Then next to that, I had my laptop computer. Then next to that, I had my netbook. And then next to that, I had my Nokia N810 tablet. And I used Synergy on all of them so I could literally go down the line from smaller to smaller to smaller screen. And it worked really well. I just did it. Proof of concept. But this, I went and checked out. I want to say all the source code was hosted at SourceForge. It's basically called Synergy Android Client, and it's only in beta. Okay, it looks like there's been no code posted to this since February of this year, so this is basically a quote-unquote dead product as well. I loaded it. I always load a quick Synergy on my Linux desktop because there is nothing easier in this world to configure when you only need your base computer and up to four other computers. There's nothing easier than quick Synergy. Loaded up fine, and then immediately got a little bit laggy. Sometimes the mouse would show up on my Android device, sometimes it didn't. Because it's a mouse touchscreen, it's a little bit, you got to get used to how to use the mouse on that. So it was a little bit of that. It didn't work horrible, but it sure didn't work great. And so I was hoping, you know, well, they'll get updates. They'll fix it. They'll get updates. And then I went and looked, and he pointed out no updates for 8 months now. So I don't know if this is another dead project or not.
It's too bad. You just never know.
Yeah.
You just never know. But I was...
You do have to have root.
Yeah. But, I mean, come on. You got root, right?
Yes, with my phone, quite literally, ADB space reboot dash bootloader, fast boot dash... OEM unlock or something like that. Unlock my bootloader. Took a zip file. I flashed twerp to it with another fast boot command. Then I just rebooted into twerp. I said apply zip, and I had unlock bootloader and root.
And for those of you wondering, yes, he did say that with his pinky firmly placed in the air.
Yes.
Yes.
And that, to be honest, was 99% of the reason I was driven towards that phone.
Which,
no matter what version of CyanogenMod this thing's running, that's all I got to do.
Remind the folks at home what phone it is.
It's a OnePlus One, or as I call it, the two.
Yeah, genius.
And there is certain ADB commands even available on Chromebooks, and I believe I could have done this from my Chromebook. But anytime there's an OTA update, even though I installed a aftermarket bootloader, I loaded twerp, the OTA update works, I get the update, and then I just hook it back up to the computer, reinstall twerp, push the zip file, and I have root again. No pain, no hassle, no fuss, no nothing. It just does it.
There you go. Yeah, I'm going to get one of those phones. But yeah, it's but for those of you who didn't get the gist, Synergy is a software that allows, traditionally anyway, aside from this version on Android, allows you to control multiple computers with one keyboard and mouse. Not just multiple monitors. So like Dor was saying, you know, he had his, you know, his desktop, his laptop, that tablet, and then one other thing. He was controlling same mouse and keyboard. You can literally just scroll. And it doesn't even need to be the same OS. You could do Windows, Mac, and Linux. But why would you? That's a lot of pain. pick one, stick with it. Well, Nightwise has got to be doing all three.
Yeah.
But yeah, fantastic piece of software. I'll give it a try. I'll talk about it in another show.
Yeah, and I will say every system administrator, network administrator, PC support guy needs to be running this software. I'll just say that. When I introduce it to my work, in less than 3 days, every one of our techs had multiple computers on their desktop and had Synergy on it. Needless to say, a day or two later, one of the wide area network guys came over and said, "Why are you all running peer-to-peer software?" To which we said, "What? What are you talking about?" And it turns out Synergy, when it connects to each of the computers, it's basically a P2P type connection. So they thought we were sharing files.
Oh, funny.
I'm like, no, dude, we're getting work done. Go back to the other side of the building.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So thank you, Chris. Door said he tried it. I haven't yet, but I will for sure. So Door. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
Trivago is the horrible U.S. commercial. Trivago.
Oh my God. I
YouTube that commercial, and every time that guy says "ideal," I want to just yank him.
Don't you just want to punch him in the throat with his perfectly tucked shirt? I don't know what it is. Whenever I see someone wearing a tucked shirt, I'm like, I look at the tuck. There's this lazy tuck that always has that fold in the middle. You're like, you lazy. Just fix that. Stretch it out. Dude. That shirt, that and his smug at you, Trivago, just punch him in the throat.
And my logic is always this. It's a free service, which means it's not good. The whole bottom line with the gimmick is they charge other people to be listed on their site. So when you search their site, you're not searching for everything. You're searching for whoever paid them money to be listed on their website.
Yep.
So it is impossible. It is technically impossible for you to find the best deal. You'll find their best deal.
The best deal, asterisk.
Yeah, exactly. It's garbage site. It's complete. And if they have enough money to pay for TV ads, I mean, let me tell you something. They need you to come out to that website just so they can have more market share, so they can claim more value to charge more money to the other hotels and everybody's services. These are the kind of sites and services I despise and I will never take part in. I will much sooner contact Cody and say, "Cody, I'm getting ready to come up to your area. What hotel should I stay with?" Because you know why? Saving money ain't everything. I want to know what hotel has the best experience, the best settings, the best perks, the best location.
Right.
You tell me. I want my friends to tell me, not some guy who keeps saying the word "ideal" over and over again.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not a violent person. And when I say punch him in the throat, you think, "Cody, that's a bit extreme." All I got to say to that is, go watch the commercial. And if you still have a comment, CodyPotus.com.
$50 says he owns a Mac. I'm just saying.
A Mac? Just one?
At least one.
Okay. Not a couple of dead ones in the closet, aka only running Lion.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not making fun of Mac users. I'm not doing that at all. So yeah, here's the sad part, folks. Okay, if we can only cue some sad music here, I'm not going to OLF this year again. I mean, it's 2 years in a row that those guys are suffering without me. And this is the last show before you go, because this is this week coming weekend, right, Dor?
Yes, sir.
Wow. So. As per usual, we will do a follow-up episode. But the thing is, I'm very sad as well, because traditionally on this show, and one of the things that really got me to go to OLF 2 years ago was hearing Russ the Beast Winner talk about his OLF recaps, not only on the Techie Geek, but also on this show. But even he's not going this year.
I know. And let me tell you something. I would pay money to just be able to sit with Russ and Tracy all day.
Yep.
Just to hear those two go back and forth with stories and topics, and it's just unbelievably great time.
Yes.
Russ is always behind in his podcast, so hopefully by February he's listening to this.
2017.
Russ already knows. I've already implored to him on Voxer how much he will be missed. And let me tell you something, Cody. Jonathan Nadeau is coming down here, and we're driving out to Columbus. He's already missed you. We haven't even gotten there yet. And he's already missing.
I know.
Because I distinctly remember a couple times I swore we were going to take Jonathan to the hospital because he was laughing so hard.
Oh, and here's the thing is that I'm not saying this to be pompous. Dor, you can attest to this. I'm a funny person. I know how to play to a crowd, play to a person, but usually when I'm out with these guys, I'm usually saying certain things, but I'm looking at the corner of my eye at one person to see how they react. And whenever Jonathan's in the room, he's that one person, and he is literally keeling over at some of the stuff that I just throw out there into the world. And I'm going to miss him as well. So yeah.
Well, yeah, he's the guy. If I was a stand-up comedian, I would pay him to come to my show. I would pay him money to come to my show because his laughter has to spur someone else to laugh.
Yes, 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 yes. I will miss all of you, and please, every single person there, safe travels. You guys staying at the Drury again? You got to be staying at the Drury, right?
I wouldn't stay anywhere else.
You're not going to go to the Red Rock. You're not going to go to the Marriott down the street.
No, not going to Motel 6.
They'd leave the light on for you though. They
leave at the Ed. Not going to Holiday Inn Express. No.
Okay. Yeah, the Drury. But I'm telling you right now, hell or high water, OLF 2015. Super Coupe is there, and I'm bringing a cape. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're not going to ramble on about it, but we will do a recap episode because I want to hear all about it. And yes, every year, sometimes we get emails saying, are you guys talking about OLF again? You guys are talking about NELF again? Yes, we're excited about Linux Fests. And if you're not excited or sick about hearing us talk about Linux Fests, then all that means is that you probably haven't been to one because they're awesome. So I'd urge you to look at your local area, see if you can make it to one ever, and you will know what you'll find what you've been missing this whole time. And I'm not trying to say that maliciously. That's a very tiny part of correspondence we get from some of you. The rest of you are completely awesome, and we appreciate the feedback. But we're gonna do it. We'll put OLF in the header of the podcast. If you don't listen to it, you don't even need to download it. It could be an auto download. It's a 67%. What OLF, click, cancel, fine. But if you want to hear a good time, check that episode out. Right door.
Testify.
Yeah. Put a Bible under my hand. Somebody. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, safe travels to you and everyone there. Like I said on G+, somebody needs to go get a photo of the ice machine on the fifth floor of the Drury. That's my girl. She kept me safe during a rough time in my life. I appreciate it. I tell her I miss her.
Will do, will do.
Eat whatever that fat, huge bacon burger is at Max and Irma's. Eat one of those for me. Get one of your sausage sandwiches.
Well, yeah, but here's one of the things. Over in the, I always want to say Cross Street Market. That's not it. Over in the market, the two-story market.
Yes. Oh, my God. That place.
I know, but listen. Supposedly, there's a place in there that actually serves draft beer.
Are you? What?
That's what I was told.
I'm so glad. I'm not glad. I'm lucky I'm not going. Because we'd have OLF2 there. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a good example. But, you know, the music festival, and then they have an alternate music. Oh, like Slam Dance and Sundance. Okay, film festivals, okay. Yeah. Running concurrently. We'd have a micro OLF fest there at the place with the draft beer.
Well, that's much better. I was going to say Meatballs 2.
Oh, don't even give me... Wow. That's an awful movie. And I love Bill Murray. Love Bill Murray. But yes.
How can you not? He's Bill Murray.
Some sequels... Although, okay, have you seen, you've seen Meatballs 2, right?
I'm sure I have, but I'm also sure I blacked it out of my memory.
So you don't remember anything about it?
I'm pretty, very kind of confident that I don't remember anything about it.
There was the guy who looked like Rocky Balboa, who was the new, one of the new, like, instructor kids, right? And then they had that knockoff E.T. in the hoodie. You don't remember this?
Okay. No.
Dude. Of course, they had the fat kid. He had freckles. That was his differentiator. He wasn't just the fat brown hair. He wasn't the kid from the Goonies doing the truffle shuffle. No, he was red hair. He had freckles. That made him different. God, I hate him.
Very.
Do you think Throwback Reviews has done Meatballs too, or is that too 80s for him to do?
They've done Meatballs. They just did Meatballs. I hope to God they never do Meatballs too.
I'll do a special episode of Meatballs too. And I'll submit it to Throwback Network.
There you go.
And he'll never air it.
Never.
Okay. Door, seriously though, be safe. Give everyone my best, and please collect good notes. If in fact, scout around and see if someone would like to come on to the show, or maybe we can even do a roundtable. Really, really crank up the OLF-ness as far as a recap. There's some first timers. Isn't Sherwin going?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and Richard Hughes is picking him up.
Yes.
In a plane.
No.
No. Oh, in a car.
No, in his car. His car, yeah.
Oh, well, that's not nearly as adventurous as I thought it was.
I know. I thought the same, too.
Okay. Oh,
no. Flying Rich apparently ain't flying.
Yeah, well, okay. I'll allow it. But Sherwin, yeah, yeah. Have a good time. But yeah, oh yeah, dude, okay. If you want to send an email to the show. No, hold on. Door, where can we find you online?
Easiest place is podnuts.com. Again, people, I really would like to do Linux stuff.
Yes.
And I will throw this out there. I am really borderline close to starting up, like now in Android App Axe, we have the Android App Axe Club,
mm-hmm.
which is nothing more than a newsletter that you might get 2 emails a week. And that's at the most. We do not send out a lot of emails. The goal of the email newsletter is not to do mass marketing. It's just to have more connections with more viewers. That's the period truth to it. I'm really close to starting up a Linux newsletter where any video I do will be freely distributed to those guys unequivocally, no holds barred. So if you want to see videos, tell me to make videos and I will release them to that group.
I would personally like that, and I can throw in my 2 or 3 cents and say that I can help create some special content for those folks as well to make it even worth their while. And what is the cost again monthly, or what do we jack it up to again?
$1 billion.
Right.
Yeah, free.
Yeah, it doesn't cost anything at all.
Free, and literally, people, maybe 1 email a week.
Yep.
And the subject line will accurately describe the content of it, so you don't even have to open it unless it really piques your interest.
Think of it as almost like a super fan club, because with Android App Addicts, I'm part of it. And by part of it, I mean I'm just on the list. I'm not doing anything for it. But it's another cool piece of interaction with the audience, and they've implemented stuff into it, and there are specials and offers that are only available to those folks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There you go. Yeah. Cool. Okay, yes, yes. So, and if you want to send me an email, please send it to cody@podnuts.com. I got, I've been saying this for a while, but it's true. I got something in the works. Hopefully, you guys will like it. If you don't, I'm going to love doing it, and I'm going to continue to do it, just like this show. If you want to send a show, if you want to send an email to the show, please send it to podnuts@linuxforrestofus.com. No, kind of, oh my God. If only Martin were still listening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, my Lord. Okay. Send it to podcast@linuxforrestofus.com. We'll read your emails on a future show. If you'd like to send in a voicemail, send it to 7076-PODNUT. That is 7076-763688. You could even dial PODNUTS and put the Z at the end, because the last letter doesn't even matter. It'll still connect. So try that. Leave us a voicemail. We do have 3, 4, or 5 voicemails we will play on a future show. Collected for the last 2-3 months. We do appreciate that. And Dor, you gotta help me out here. How successful has the podnuts.com/Amazon affiliate link been over the last 90 days?
Unusually good. I really can't thank you guys enough. You know, it's the most seamless, easiest way to support the network and ensure minimal advertisement on all of the shows.
So please, if you're going to make any purchases on there, just use the link podnuts.com/Amazon. And it doesn't cost you a penny more. You're not redirected to a different site. It is Amazon. It looks exactly the same. You were more than likely going to just buy that stuff anyway. But this way, like Dor said, you are helping out the network, because we get a little kickback from those purchases. And that money goes a long way to providing different shows. With content, with giveaways. Of course, there are costs involved with this endeavor, and we really do appreciate it. And yes, as of late, it has kicked up quite a bit, so we do really, really do appreciate it. I'm sure that heading into the holiday season, we'll see even more of a response, which would be fantastic. Very cool. All right. So, and as always, we spoke about our good friend Jonathan Nato. I salute you, sir. I'm going to miss giving the Admiral a big pat on the back and sharing a couple beers, let me be honest, a few, but more than a few. Please visit, although, the Accessible Community Foundation at the acf.tk. That is the computer foundation run by our good friend Jonathan Nato, which, of course, fights a good fight for those who would otherwise be left behind in technology, those with disabilities. For as little as $2 a month, you can become a regular contributor to the Accessible Community Foundation in order to put technology into the hands of those who need it most. And if you want to support Jonathan a little bit more, please head over to sonargnu-linux.com. That is his custom Linux distribution, which also has a ton of accessibility options, which is based off Manjaro Linux. So fantastic piece of software there to get those folks started if it's their first Linux environment, or if they have tried expensive alternatives for several of the software packages in there, whether they're blind, disabled, dyslexic. There's a lot of options in there for making it a much more usable system for those folks. So definitely check that out. And that is all we have for this week. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Door, safe travels, and we'll do our OLF recap soon. But please remember and remind everyone at OLF that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.